Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And it appears like this hour, I won't be doing it all by myself, because my very special guest, Alex Anseri, has an hour left of obsolete solar battery left. Alex, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinnie, I'm glad I can be here.
I'm glad you could be here too, for however long you can be. So we want to get straight into it so we don't miss anything. So you survived the local war zone known as Portland, Oregon, did you? And you managed to escape the Portland internment camp. Tell us all about it.
Well, yeah, the last time I was on the show, I was still in Portland. After returning to Portland after spending some time off the grid in Colorado, at least getting my feet wet, and doing a little bit of exploring and scouting. And I made the unfortunate decision, although I learned a lot, but I made the decision that maybe it would be the right thing to do to go back to the big city, to where I was from, or am from, Portland, Oregon, which has become a place just inundated with the hipster zombie apocalypse at this time. Like, everything that you hear that's wrong in our society, the feminization of men, gender warfare.
So are you saying that these are kind of X-Men? So this is like kind of X-Men Oregon?
It definitely is a high concentration of broken, lost souls at minimum. And yes, I'd say, not to be insulting, but to provide a little bit of a criticism of society today, kind of to look at it from another angle, a lot of half men and women, not just men, but women, like people that are from the core centers of Babylon today, Babylon's biggest cities, Los Angeles, New York City. In the last few years in America, Portland's been labeled the number one place to move to in mainstream magazines, not only in the United States, but in England. And so all of a sudden there's been this big push of all these different people that are of this certain narcissistic mindset, although some of them don't see it. And so I returned to that city as this other wave was coming in. And I obviously did survive that. I did survive a year living in my vehicle, upgrading at one point to one of these homemade teardrop campers, pulling it around town with my 85 Toyota truck. A viewer on YouTube invited me over, and with his tools, we actually put it together.
Did they call them teardrop campers? Because really depressing to live in, by chance.
Absolutely.
You can't make this shit up.
Exactly. No. On a serious note, it's shaped like a teardrop, and they're really small, so it's like the poor man's camper. But boy, I sure was crying on the inside. I was really numb to the whole thing. I really wasn't that traumatized by it, because I already felt like I had the ability to survive. And it was more or less a little bit of shock that the city was transforming so quickly into the them, one group versus another. A very large homeless population and a very hip, cool crowd moving in. Yay. You know, and they saw the TV show Portlandia, which does portray a pretty insane reality that some people salivate for. So Portlandia really functioned as this bizarre Twilight Zone infomercial to move to Portland. And as I was walking the park, I would see people with these strange faces, like, this is not the city that I was sold in the TV show. They were so confused, Vinny. They actually were expecting the television to tell them accurately what Portland was like. So there's people that have been going through the shock process. They may not be admitting it. There may not be a TV show dedicated to this, a reality TV show. You know, the lost soul that finds himself in Portland naked, drunk, falling down the street, wondering how they got there. But there should be, because there's also a lot of people in Portland with a lot of serious problems. I mean, just look at me.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we is known to the U.S. military as the shock and campaign. Because it's very disappointing, isn't it? And, right. The point that you made there about how Americans are now thinking that the television's going to accurately represent anything anymore is just true testament to the success of the CIA's disinformation campaigns.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people in Portland that are of that mainstream liberal left Democrat. Oh, we're so progressive. We're not racist. Here, let's get behind the latest fad, being pushed by CNN, and let's call it progressive, and let's call people with a different view of reality a conspiracy theorist. Let's just look at them like they're crazy. And so in addition to the high cost of rent, you have a lot of this fake progressiveness, not only with this blind worship of Barack Obama, you know, there were more protests when Bush was the president, that there was like this weird religious Obama coming out of water on the local Portland newspaper called Willamette Week moment, a religious moment for Portlanders when Obama came in 2007 and 8 when he was campaigning. I mean, people fell in love with him, and that was kind of heartbreaking. But the local politicians are just as corrupt and just as manipulative. And when you hear about child sex trafficking rings in the Vatican, there's also things like that on the local level, on that level of perversion. So I would say don't move to Portland if you're looking for a new life, if there's anyone listening, because there's got to be someone out there that might be considering it, and they may not know what they're in for. I would say that Portland is a microcosm for the macrocosm, full of archonic entities, spiritual warfare, debauchery, and social engineering, brought to you by the New World Order. And regular geoengineering and chemtrails to go with it.
You know, you just described Europe.
That's what I've been told. And I've been told that I've described, when I describe Portland, that I'm describing Stockholm, Sweden. And so, I mean, we may not know this, but you know, many of these cities are mirroring each other and are not necessarily so unique anymore.
Yeah, well, that's called the artificial Swedener effect.
And so to make a long story short, I did escape the Portlandia experience. And what I wanted to talk about tonight, though, and bring some positive, I guess, sharing.
It's funny you should just say that, because I was just thinking as you were saying, we're criticizing, we're attacking, we're noticing the problems. And what's happening now is there's a sort of shift in consciousness going on, and everybody wants to hear about the solutions. They want to hear about positive things. And I was thinking about two aspects or two views on this. Number one, if you don't understand the problems, you're not going to be able to impose any solution. Ah, but number two, if you spend all your time only focusing on negative stuff and you don't spend any time promoting the good stuff that's going on, the good things that people really want to hear, people don't want to hear it anything from you anymore.
Right, that's true. And
further to go on this, people going to Portland searching for a new life, or people moving anywhere to search for a new life, that's surely one aspect that's really good, but the other aspect is your new life can only really come from within. How much of your old life are you prepared to give up and suffer without that part of your life anymore in order to create something new? It usually comes from within. And it reminds me of there was this episode of King of the Hill. I'm not sure if you've seen this episode, where his suburb starts getting invaded by all these hipsters, you know, and a man who sit there just drinking beer out of the can and having barbecues and things like that is suddenly confronted with all this hippie nonsense going on all around him, and people drinking micro brewed beer and this kind of thing. And eventually, the whole community got together and actually chased all the hipsters out of town. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that what I think that episode was really touching on is that sometimes our culture does get invaded. And indeed, sometimes we're even part of the invading culture itself. And it's, for me, it's not racism, it's not negative or whatever, to see inherent cultural problems being established by certain viewpoints that move into the area and cluster and become the new minority. And is it resisting change to say, this is probably not a good idea, maybe we should change our culture a little bit, maybe we should not be lying to people and say that this is the great place where all this stuff can be done, because we're leaving a lot of people who would ordinarily be happy and or successful here literally out in the cold on the streets as a result of this kind of change in our local culture at such a rapid rate. Is that anything close to what you were talking about?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. In addition, You have senior citizens that are dependent on retirement, that are on a fixed income. So when the property values go up, the taxes go up, and they're expected to pay more to the system each and every year. And these are the real Portlanders. So, you know, you can remove the word Portland and replace it with something else, with some other city, your town. And that's the heartbreaking thing. That's what we're seeing here. And, you know, on a side note, I can mention that China is building a very large hotel in the South Waterfront District, which is adjoining downtown Portland. So there's massive Chinese investment coming in for these new projects. And China just bought Seattle's second largest, actually their largest skyscraper, which is the second largest on the West Coast. So these are also very highly symbolic moves taking place as well. The large, massive heroin problem that Portland's known to have, as well as child sex trafficking problem being rated number one in the United States. We can move on to other things, but I mean, this is me looking at the microcosm going, there really is nothing in the city for me anymore. Yes, I felt drawn to come back here, but what this really was my experience to see my hometown and its current reality being twisted into something else. It has a history going back 150 years ago, mind you, of Shanghai, men being kidnapped, drunk sailors, miners, and loggers that found their way to Portland in its first days to party. And what they found was a whole mafia there waiting for them, which was connected with the city, that would kidnap these men after they drank too much and get them to sign these documents giving their rights away, maritime law, for a night on the town. And they had the first women of the town were prostitutes. So you had this old town, Chinatown area, which was like this little hell on earth spot where people are being kidnapped. People were hooking. People were probably getting STDs that probably existed at that time only. I don't know. But a bunch of bad things happened. And the city tried to pretend that that never happened. And the reality was they allowed it to happen because they controlled the waterfront. They controlled the properties where these things were taking place. Fast forward to the 1940s and the 1950s. You had a lot of things come out dealing with the city running the city's whorehouses, hundreds of them. And being in connection with other criminal elements, they're running gambling casinos and things like that. So they were brought up before some sort of a corruptions investigation, some sort of hearing in the year 1953 or 1954. And RFK was on that board. So this was when Portland went on the national spotlight as a city that was in bed with local criminals. They're running whorehouses and gambling dens. You fast forward to today's day and age, you have a real estate guy, a real estate tycoon in Portland. His name is Terry Bean. He was personally thanked by Obama for being the top fundraiser, and he's very close to the mayor. And he was busted for sex with a child in the last 6 months to a year. And there's a lot of that type of, you know, those type of stories locally. And so what I'm saying is, long story short, sum this up. What's the point? What's this mean? What have I discovered? What have I stumbled upon? What's been driving me crazy? It's like history repeating itself in the same zone. I'm going to give a plug for one of the best cop watchers out there. His name is Mike Bluehair. And even though Mike's out there phoning the police, you're not really seeing police brutality. You're actually seeing police act probably the most professional you've ever seen. You're seeing people falling down drunk. You're seeing people drink a little too much and acting like they literally have spirits in them. You're seeing people in a rage fit. You're seeing a bunch of young college people acting like they're going to fight the police, a mob of 200 versus 10. You're seeing the most insane behavior in the same area where all this Shanghai and brothel activity.
I must note the irony, the interesting correlation here between a man named Blue here who closely watches the Thin Blue Line.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maybe I'm splitting hairs here. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to go back to what you were saying before about, you know, you see your city. And this is the thing. I was actually just thinking about this yesterday. Funnily enough, you should mention it. My city, Auckland, I've lived here most of my life. I see so much happening to it. We went to a bar last night with a whole bunch of other truthers and things like that. And my friend Mikhail, my bandmate for the Pakehachis, he comes in with us and he was looking around and he says, man, this is just not the same place. And maybe it's just that you haven't been to that particular place in a little while. So that was what I was thinking. I was sort of two minds about it. One, it changes the constant of the universe. Number two, whenever you vote for somebody and they're on a campaign platform of change, you can be assured that change is for the worse. And when we support that kind of thing, you notice exactly what happens. But when I look around my city, I see what other people do not see, because I know the intentions behind these little micro changes. I know the end game. I know exactly how they're planning to run the city. I know how they're currently running the city. And a realization dawned on me. Not only is it no longer my city, it never was. They run shit here. I just live here.
And me looking at Portland's past is the same awareness. Some of these things were already there. Maybe there was the facade at one point when we were younger that our city was a certain way, or that reality was a certain way. And then we get schooled in history and we find out that it never really was our city. That, you know, some of these cities have been incorporated for a very long time, working with various intelligence agencies involved in, you know, terrorist drills and, you know, believing the government official version of history, playing their part in the drug war, building up the police departments to terrifying levels, being involved in, you know, the killing of unarmed civilians, black, white, Hispanic, Middle Eastern, Asian. So the synchronicity, the part where we are now, me being in Colorado, is looking back at all this in reflection, because the current moment only came about through manifestation and thought and saying, okay, that's it. I'm going to leave. I don't know how I'm going to leave, but I'm out of here and I'm going to go back to where I feel safe. And I'm going to find a way to get internet, and I'm doing all this without a phone. Some people ask me, hey, does Alex have a phone? I haven't had a phone for 4 years, and I have no plans to get a phone.
Well, I guess
it does.
That's, well, that
when I say I'm off the grid, I'm not joking.
Up on a phone just in case your internet drops. He's off the
we
grid,
haven't,
literally.
Yeah, so
he's
20
off
minutes in,
a reservation.
I am now at the most historic moment in my life, because I've been off the grid before. I've been out in the desert, high alpine portion of the San Luis Valley, near Mesita, near Manassas. These are cities miles from little towns, rather, miles from Denver. I'd say like 4 hours. And so it's not exactly Denver. People think Colorado, they think Denver, they think, hey, you know, the legalization of pot, that's what's bringing people here. Some people are a little resentful about that. Some of these local towns, they're a little wary of outsiders, but Colorado's set to grow because I think a lot of people intuitively are being drawn here. Okay, I don't have a crystal ball, but I have felt the same way for years that there's going to be trouble on the West and East Coast at some point, big trouble in the dense population centers where a lot of people are. It doesn't mean that, you know, I see a bunch of survivors just in the middle of America, but at the same time, you know, I've seen people live outside the system, living off propane for months, living off firewood for months, living in homes that they built themselves in a county, Costilla County, which allows the building of things that for the most part is absolutely illegal where most people are listening to this radio show right now. And I think this is actually very valuable survival information for a couple of different reasons, Vincent. Colorado, for this area for years, has been very, very dry. It's been in a drought. We've seen nearly daily rains this year. Well, what's happening is this cheap so-called barren land that only costs $5,000 for 5 acres that you can build just about anything you damn want on your property, as long as you pay the damn septic, have a damn poop machine or poop stall, pay a damn permit for the basics, and you're good to go to live on land if you can handle the winds and if you can handle the sight of beautiful mountains around you and all 360. Now, I understand the sight of beautiful mountains is really offensive to people that have to have their iPod, iPhone crack every second of every day. They need to have their infotainment. They need to be told if they go off the grid that a drone is going to come with and tase them up the ass, okay? But the reality is that's not true. There are laws out there that say you can't harvest rainwater. There are people doing it anyways because for generations they've lived that way.
As far as I know, speaking of drought, you know when mm-hmm. weeds like really scarce and it's very hard to find some, it's called a drought. You know, when it's real dry out there, bro. And I think that's one of the other interesting elements to really note about this is that that same connection, the same thing that happens with laws in terms of cannabis use, they get broken all the time, and there's really nothing you can do about it because it's a stupid law. So if they tell you you can't collect rainwater, 95% right. of people go, that's a really stupid law. I'm not going to follow it.
And there's lots of stupid laws that people should.
And just keep smoking it up.
You know, act in defiance of. But for the most part, I got to say that Costilla County has impressed the people that have come to reside here when they have tried to, you know, play by the rules. A lot of people found themselves a freer way of life. And I've also discovered that quinoa, which some of the listeners may be familiar with, spelled Q-U-I-N-O-A, some people are familiar, some people aren't. It was cultivated by the Incas at a lamb's quarter. And it's a food preferred by vegans and vegetarians. It's a very expensive superfood, and it only grows in this part of North America outside of Peru and Bolivia. The San Luis Valley region also sits on the largest aquifer, underground water source, also in all of North America. It also is the source of numerous UFO legends, and it's also been a spot of numerous gold hunting adventures and Spanish explorers, Indian wars, things of that nature. So it's a little unknown part of the planet that seems to, like other spiritual centers, because I believe this is one. I believe that's what I'm investigating, a place that others have come as well. It's a place that pulls you in and spits you out. And I've heard this about people that choose to go off grid or go up to the mountain. This isn't necessarily about an absolute reality or black and white. I want to mention that, you know, becoming an absolute survivalist and preparing for everything to implode and never leaving society again and living in a trailer, you know, oiling your guns. I think that I speak for a few other people that this is a part of the evolution of one's soul to go into, you know, nature and absorb information, think about things you normally wouldn't think about when you're constantly surrounded by distracting people and distracting situations. And you go back into city and you go about your life with a renewed outlook on things. And then you go back and you do it again, and it's cyclical. And I would even say it's cyclical with the solar flares, because I see the solar flare influence over not only in humanity but my own life. I see that in the recent move to Portland, you know, I'm not just speaking with anger and blame. There are periods where everybody's moving to that godforsaken city. and there's periods where people are moving out. It's cyclical. It's just like a sound wave. And that's how the sun's behaving. And so to me, that's what I'm perceiving. Some people could even say it's anthropology, that we as human beings are affected by such a great degree by the sun that we cannot hold back the compulsion that perhaps it's time to try living in another part of the planet, as the very magnetic fields of the planet itself are being affected by the coronal mass ejections. And so for me, my life and what's happening is in direct relation to what's happening with the sun.
Yeah, well, it'd be pretty straightforward to assume that. Just you know, think about it in terms of this. How much life would there be on Earth without a sun? None. So your life is directly kind of connected to that sun then, isn't it? What do they do? Vitamin D. You know? You getting outside, you're getting some vitamin D in the sun, bro? You know? How many people don't know?
This is really important, and that plants, light. You know, to think about plants, photosynthesis. At some point, I'm going to be launching a website that's going to put some of the information that I've discovered. Maybe we could talk about that in a future show, because I'd like to reference certain things. But what I can say is that things like meditation are really valuable during times like this, because when you see the pattern between war starting and false flags during times of solar flares, you can look at 9/11 and that being a period of more solar flares. The human emotional system is far more responsive to stimuli. And that's the reason why you're seeing more activity. And so we can turn something, a negative, into a positive, depending on what we see as a negative or positive. But, you know, I think some of us are smart enough to be able to see that which helps us and that which harms us. And if we respond just impulsively, it could be very detrimental because we're emotional beings. And that's probably the most important thing to relay, that right now you're seeing like Jade Helm. Yeah, and I would even say you're seeing disinformation that all this, like, we're going to get hit with an asteroid on the 20th. You being involved in the alternative media for a few years, every fall we go through this scare that something's going to happen because it's on beforeitsnews.com.
What do you mean it's only every fall? I thought it was every week, every month. You know, look, there's a million things that are trying to kill you, and they're all currently doing it just in a very slow way. And what people like to do is they like to get a shockingly large quantity of hits to their website by telling you the biggest thing that's going to kill you right now to grab your attention and to make you forget about all the wireless radiation, the poison in your water, and the poison in your own mind that you keep feeding yourself called fear.
Absolutely.
Now, here's the thing. You were talking about using these things emotionally, meditation, during these times of great turmoil. It made me think of alchemy. Being able to transmute that which makes you afraid into that which makes you laugh your ass off. And we call it the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Absolutely. And there's not enough real shows I enjoy listening to anymore in the alternative media. I'll listen to your show here and there. But there's really, I can't recall the last time I listened to RBN. But kudos to Mark Passio, who has a great show over at RBN, actually. WhatOnEarthIsHappening.com.
It's that guilt by association thing, doesn't it? I saw I was talking with a couple of guys last night, and we had this dude in New Zealand called Ian Parker, and he's a truck driver. And he has done, in my opinion, the most categorically awesome analysis of the New Zealand financial system and the Prime Minister's financial past, John Key, right? And we had a conversation. We had a conversation last night, and it turns out that he once expressed that he thinks that one of the mainstream left wing parties, the Labour Party, is going to, do something about this or whatever. And the sort of, you know, what they consider the naivete of that statement, that you can trust either one of the parties to do anything about the financial crimes in this country, they said, I'm going to switch off them now completely, forever. And I said, whoa, that's kind of stupid, bro. Because think about the entire pie, the entire world, all the systems of understanding, all the different fields. Do you think that there's anybody who's really, really brilliant at one of those fields, who also has a expanded and comparable brilliance of awareness of all of the rest of them? No, they don't. There's a million things to know in this world. You can either know a tiny little bit about a million things, or you can know one thing really well. And you basically, in order to do that, you have to block out a lot. And this means that a lot of our people of expertise, they'll say things and do things that you won't agree with because you know something that they don't, or maybe they've had to block it off. And I'm not like passing judgment or making any assumptions about Ian. In fact, I just posted his video today about John Key and his past that we did a couple of years ago. It's got like over 25,000 hits, and it's the most viewed John Key video on my channel, and I've made lots about him. But it seems that what we do is we judge people based upon association, based upon individual ideas, without actually recognizing the inherent value in what they do in a holistic manner. And to not be so judgmental, I think, is a great tool for bringing people together on the points that you agree. Because it's on the points that we agree that we should come together and collaborate. The points that we disagree, I think that we can probably leave them for a civilized debate, perhaps another time, preferably a time when we're not under threat of enslavement and subsequent extermination by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery. I mean, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
Well, thanks to YouTube, there are just so many people we can find out there with similar understandings that came to their own conclusions on their own, and that's a beautiful thing. So I'm always finding new YouTube channels that I'm subscribing to all the time, and I even bother to even remember some of their names, but I remember their faces. And sometimes within a few minutes of listening to somebody, you know you have a great guest potential there, or someone, you know, who's worth listening to if their video is 1 hour, you know, and they're talking about some deep, elaborate concept. So that's the awesome thing about my current situation is, as I was just kind of pondering and being in gratitude a few hours ago, even though I've got limited power at the moment, but I'm going to fix that. I have access to all this knowledge and information, you know, documentaries, sky's the limit. Want to learn something, want to learn a new trade, want to build something. I'm in a better position now to do those things. And a lot of this just manifested from thought to pretty much continue what I can continue alternative media wise without feeling that I have to be in a city, but also being in a mental state that I'm willing to leave here also in the future and pretty much use this off the grid space as a base, if you will. And travel the world, explore things. But for the most part, I consider myself allergic to dense population centers, to living amongst people, a lot of people, to being around smart meters. Fortunately, Portland didn't have fluoridated water, but there's probably still something in the water anyways.
Well, every single thing of bottled water and juice and all the food and everything's got fluoride right in it. So it's like, oh, there isn't fluoride in the water, but there's fluoride in every fucking thing else.
I don't know why people still drink out of plastic bottles when they should know better, supposed to wake people, but that's a bad habit.
This is even the thing. That's bisphenylalanine, right? It's a feminizer, so it'll either, if you're a woman, it'll give you breast cancer, or if you're a male, it'll turn you into a girly boy. Not all at once, mind you, but over a long period of time. And then they come out with this, oh, we've got BPA-free products now. And guess what? They've got even worse chemicals in them. That'll teach you for trying to save your own ballsack.
That article I haven't read, but I'll get right on it. No, I have.
Yeah, that's why I love Suzanne Posel at Occupy Corporatism, because her journalism is so good that it's inherently depressing and alleviates you of any irrational hope.
I'm definitely going to look
through its accuracy, mind you.
Right.
You know, we need people like that.
Yeah, Occupy Corporatism, a couple of AMTV media is a good website, blacklistnews.com. I like to go there for information. So, you know, I definitely try to keep aware. But what the most amazing stuff, though, has been happening just in the last couple of days, taking this last exit off the grid, finding internet access. And for the very first time, let me mention this, as opposed to last time, coming across a few other individuals that agree with some of the things that we're talking about on this show, that feel drawn out, you know, to be in this particular spot, to see synchronicity at work by wanting to manifest, say, a situation where you're on your own, off the grid, but there's a few other people around you potentially that aren't going to be a threat, nor are you a threat to them. So certain, you know, agreements without money can be easily attained in relation to hauling water, getting food, resources, and using power, sharing an internet station or hub. Really simple stuff. Just don't kill each other. Just don't kill each other. So where's the need for police in that? Where is the need for government in that? Where's the need to overthink certain things with a small group of people that are helping each other survive? Because it would be a little more complicated just by myself. But 3-4 strangers that just mysteriously happen to find each other through social media and or YouTube. Yeah, I happened to find this guy's channel and checking out the building of his Earthship. And he's checking out my channel, and I realize he left me a comment 10 months ago. I just didn't see it. So the universe has a way. Something's going. We got Archons going on. Archon gangsters, you know, harvesting energy from cities like Portland, L.A., Auckland, New Zealand, New York. We also got these weird synchronicities like going under the radar that I don't believe is controlled by the Archons. And I believe that the Archons do want us living in big cities, even if it's okay, feels fun to live in a city and get your slice of pizza and get on the subway and all that. I think they
have a hive mentality.
Yeah, I think they want us in these hives because these cities are starting to look more like hives. The behavior is starting to look more assimilated.
Guess what the New Zealand Parliament building's called?
What's that?
The Beehive.
That's,
and
that's,
actually looks like a beehive, and indeed it was designed by a Freemason who became the Prime Minister. You know, again, you can't make this shit up. But well, you were saying so many things there, and you and me sometimes when we get on there, exactly the same thing has happened to us within the last few days. Usually, like for example, in the last 24 hours, I have got my announcement that my television show is going on TV tonight, right? And I also hosted a Truth or Dare open mic and music event. We had a whole bunch of truthers and everything. And this is exactly within 24 hours of each other. And exactly a month ago, within 24 hours of each other, I was having a meeting at the television studio organizing to shoot the first TV episodes. And then later that exact same afternoon, within the same 24-hour time span, I go to a guy at a bar, and we organise these Truth or Dare events, right? So isn't that funny that exactly within 24 hours of each other, they get organised and planned, and then when exactly within 24 hours of each other, exactly a month later, they both come to fruition?
So this is another synchronicity I've noticed between myself and other people that I've either gotten to know on some level. It's like seeing patterns where and I've thought of several other people in the alternative media where I've noticed parallels between times where I had moved and times where they had moved. And like shifts where you could tell, like, I think we are going through energy shifts, but it's not one shift. It's like layer after layer after layer. So I do believe in the idea of an energy shift, but there are so many within a lifetime.
Well, there's a wavelength. You know how they say, like, we're on the same wavelength kind of thing, and that's why similar stuff happens to us. And the Archons, as you were talking about, I was just thinking about this morning before getting on the show. I, like, woke up real tired after being up late last night, and I was thinking about psychopaths. About Archons, and I figured out the reason humans think we're the dominant species on the planet because we've got no natural predators. But that's not true. Archons are our natural predators. These psychopaths, aren't they?
And the only way to free ourselves from that, and I agree, is to deal with that which keeps us enslaved. And it can sound very Buddhist at times, but there are totally reasons why those that came before us went on vows to not run out and do anything to get laid. There are reasons that those that came before us went out and sacrificed in order to access their higher selves. So they went, okay, that's it. No whiskey at the bar. No being stuck in my lower chakra, allowing these entities to get cords into me, using me as my own sex slave. No, I'm not going to. And I would say that running out in this day and age, being involved in the open dating scene is going to open you up to a lot of energies. You want to talk Eve Lorgan? You want to talk about alien interference in human relationships? That stuff, I believe, is very real. And I believe I've experienced it. And I've seen waves where I've seen women loose and open, and waves to where it's like, I suspect, why did some people come into my life? Because there's a weird energy that almost seemed to walk in with it. And I'm not going to get specific. And some stuff some people would never believe. But I've had the experience, and I've seen the light. And I'll tell you what, we have to be careful in this day and age what energies we open ourselves up to. So men can be duped just like women. But let's just focus on male responsibility. In this day and age, a male truther should not be so easily led by the flesh. And I think there's a lot that aren't. I don't need a lecture. I think I'm going to say that I think that, you know, this whole MGTOW movement, because there is crossover in what's happening in the world, it's a result of some higher, you know, awareness that men don't want to be enslaved to their... some people are just angry. They're angry at the behavior they're seeing. But I'm saying we need to be responsible for that. We just can't blame. We have to be responsible for freeing ourselves from these things, because I don't think there is a way around self-responsibility. There are people that are really good at playing the blame game with certain groups and Bilderberg groups and, it's the Jews. But obviously it's more complex than that. And obviously we're here for a reason, or we wouldn't be here. We'd be somewhere else.
It's basically, I blame myself And everybody needs to take personal responsibility just for the part you play. Don't blame yourself for the entire problem, because you didn't create the entire problem. Blame yourself for the part that you played, and you'll find that through guilt, it'll motivate you to correct that mistake.
Right, and I want to say one more thing. The whole thing with going off the grid and living the free life is just a metaphor for something else. I mean, it may physically come in the form of someone. My side project at the moment is digging about a 10-foot circle, and I'm going to try to go 10 feet down. And I'm going to try to put up a green screen using solar panels, and I'm going to try bragging about, look at me, I've got a studio, and I'm in the ground! I'm in the ground! No one else is doing this, and that's my goal this winter. Just to spearhead a new idea, you know.
Green energy, bro. Mm-hmm. By the way, Alex, actually, I want to warn you about this. The converters for the solar panels put off a lot of wireless radiation, so usually don't put them in the living spaces where you are during the day. It's sort of okay to put them like on a bedroom, but of course you're just in the one thing, but you want to probably keep the generators a little bit further away from you so you don't get that kind of radiation thing from the converters. But yeah, that's just a little interesting side note, because one of my friends is from safespace.net.nz. He's one of only three qualified people to test places for wireless radiation and things like that. He's got these devices. And so when he's consulting for people's homes, usually they put the solar panels on the garage or something, you know, where people aren't at during the day, generally, just to keep it kind of a little bit extra safe. But yeah, interesting side note.
Yeah, that's definitely something I'll look into. Another synchronicity, a few neighbors know each other, or the people here know the neighbor, and they have access to a well. The big question when I went to the San Luis Valley the first time is, how the hell can anyone survive out there? There's no water. And so small little steps, solar, internet, that's one, batteries, another, water, having a water source, being able to grow something, being able to psychologically live in the environment, that's probably the biggest, to be actually be psychologically able to. So in no way am I just sitting here advertising this area, but I will say, and what has become clear to me and a few others, this area has just drawn certain people out here, just like other places like Sedona or other areas in the United States or on the planet. Peru is one that comes up a lot for David Icke, for perhaps Terrence McKenna. The San Luis Valley is its own. So as we approach these potentially dangerous times, you know, not to sound old-fashioned, but there really might be a mountain for us somewhere to go up on the hill. We don't want to sell our, you know, I can go on and on. We don't want to sell ourselves short as to what's possible. 1 year ago, someone said, Alex, I see you in an RV. And I'm thinking, I'm so broke. How can you see me in an RV? I got nothing. That was before the teardrop camper. Oh, she was having a vision psychically of me building this teardrop camper. No, try again. Because days before, I decided to go to Colorado. I accidentally hit someone. I rear-ended someone, and I thought that I had damaged my truck to the point of it not working. Well, maybe it was meant to happen, but the fact of the matter is, if I tried to drive that 85 truck and that teardrop camper, I would have major car problems. What happened was not only the donation to help me get the RV, the live-in RV, which I'm in now, and the giving away of the truck. I gave away that truck and trailer just like that in Portland, all within days. And things just kept moving forward. So what I'm saying is, people keep saying, I can't do this, I can't do this. Well, I did the same thing. The universe may still override your negativity bullshit just to surprise you. Could be a reward for good deeds. Who knows? Could be random. But I wouldn't sell yourself short, because I think the work that I've done resulted in that.
For me, it's like all down to suffering to a large degree, and in my opinion, the most valuable lessons in life are often those that cost you the most. It's the only reason why you actually have a concept of value in those concepts themselves. Now, I believe we may have just lost Alex. He's cut out on the broadcast, so that's unfortunate. That's solar panels for you folks. Yeah, so there's a reason why I don't go off-grid, because I want to be 100% reliable. It's trailblazing, on the other hand, and actually teaching people how to do this and not contributing to the system if you don't need to be a part of the system, like in order to get your job done and that kind of thing, get out of it. You know, that's the best thing you could possibly do. However, when you're in the middle of the largest city in the country and it's the center of activism kind of thing, there's a inherent need and perhaps a justification for having super fast broadband, for having access to the central city to attend protests that's only 20 minutes away by car. That sort of thing, I believe, is really essential to what I do as a radio show host and activist, because I need to be here, ultimately. I don't necessarily want to be. Whenever I go out and into the country and everything, I feel a lot better. And there was a great quote, I think, that the whole concept of building a home is one that you won't ever want to leave. You don't feel like you're at work when you're there. And sometimes we don't really value what it is that's home, do we? Sometimes we don't protect it from other things. Sometimes it's like builders, for example. This is an interesting thing. I was doing some babysitting, well, looking after autistic boys with Asperger's syndrome, that kind of thing. And a couple of those people were builders. And I noticed this thing. A builder's home is usually not finished because he builds for a living. And then when he comes home, he's like, oh, no. And so there's like holes in the floor or like skirting up the sides or some crap like that. And I wonder, is there part of an essential balance to life? Is there something that we can do about this problem that we have? Is there a possibility that we could do something that's a lot of hard work, but actually continue to do it, even when we're resting, you know? That would be the greatest thing in the world. Enjoying what you do so much that it doesn't feel like work. Isn't that the concept of what freedom is supposed to be about? Following your own destiny. And what Alex has gone through is something a lot of us can't even really fathom. Really sacrificing all the creature comforts. You know, living in a teardrop trailer for the truth. Doing a real exploration of how the universe works for you is something that implies a lot of risk. A risk that most people aren't prepared to take. But it's never without its consequences. It's never without its sacrifices. But again, I reiterate, the most valuable lessons in life are often those that cost you the most. Now, this doesn't mean, you know, have you ever noticed how everybody misinterprets what you say? They try to find something negative and something that's the positive meaning is actually pretty obvious. So it's not meant to say, go out there and flippantly risk everything and just, you know, don't think about it. But if you really want to do something, if you've got a compulsion to do something, if there's something in your mind that's telling you to do it, to do it, to do it, to do it, but there's another part of your mind that says, don't do it, don't do it, you should be thinking about doing it, and you should be planning on it. You should be sending your intentions out on there, and you'll find that this is how the universe works. Once you're intent on doing something, the barriers seem to dissolve away. They really do. And opportunities just pop up. Just the more focused you get. It's quite interesting because I'm doing a whole bunch of things. Trying to make a documentary, do a radio show, do all the YouTube videos, post up stuff on Facebook promoting the such, doing a television show, doing a part of a band. And within this last week, big things have started happening, and people have been starting to contact me, and deals are being made, and conversations are being had, plans are being hatched. Just boom, 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 like you've dropped a whole bunch of seeds, and only just now it is the season where they take root and start to grow. Like nice bamboo, infectious, thick, strong, and tall. Kind of like me, except I'm not that thick, and I'm not that strong, but I am pretty tall. It comes down to this concept that we see the slow motion dismantling of our homes, the things that we think are homes, our cities, our towns. All of these things that we think were ours never were. And the world is actually your home. The whole planet. Just think about that for a minute. I was having this conversation with a girl named Eva last night. That the world is actually your home. And the whole nation state thing doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. What if people were free to roam? What if cultures were free to do this, that, and the other? And if it was a globalist control paradigm where there was a world government and all the countries were part of that government? No, that would not be good for anybody. However, if there was no government and people were literally living by intention and honor and charity and voluntarism without taxation, without a brutal police force, with conscience, a planet run by the people, with no central authority, no borders necessarily to speak of, just the whole human race working for their own interests, the interests of the human species. And you only play your one part in that, and you don't participate in anybody else's part. You sit there, you're in your town, you're growing your vegetable garden. That's a contribution to the entirety of humanity. A simple action as growing a garden and contributing more fresh food that isn't GMO laden into the environment. It counteracts the scumbaggery intentions. And every tiny little action you take with the intention behind benefiting humanity, indeed, in a small way, does benefit the entire human race. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and I would very much like people to support me, so go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and sign up today to give a $5 a month monthly gift to support this broadcast and all the other operations and things that I'm doing. Survival is a very simple thing, and it's really, really appreciated when other people take care of that very simple thing for you so that you can focus on the survival of the entire human race. It's a give-and-take thing. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And I would love it if more people would listen to this live broadcast. So if you follow me on Facebook, sorry, I need to pronounce that correctly, it's Facebook. You can follow me, just my independent profile or my like page. I really want to go people to search Vinnie Eastwood. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. And go ahead and like my profile page. I want to get that really high up. I have a competitive edge to me. And, wait, competitive edge? Well, I had that too, but that wasn't what I meant to say. What I meant was competitive streak. Particularly, in fact, almost exclusively, with New Zealand alternative media and New Zealand mainstream media. These are the things that I want to do. I want to outrank them in as many avenues as possible in terms of online activity. So far, I have been successful in really only one element of eclipsing all mainstream and alternative media in New Zealand, and that is via subscribers on YouTube, of which there are now approximately 21,000. The closest competitor in terms of somebody who actually produces news on YouTube from New Zealand would be the New Zealand Herald TV, and they have like 16,000, I think. My goal is to double them, but other social media platforms, website rankings, and things of that nature, I'm well down the queue. These organizations that have immense resources to put into their television and broadcasting campaigns, is it's hard to compete against when you have virtually zero resources. I have one resource in particular, though, that they do not. A fan base that has a moral ethic, a high level of intelligence, and a strong conscience. If you're listening to the show, you probably fit that personality profile to a T. And this is why your views are reflected on this show, but are not reflected in the mainstream media, because they do not think like we do. And it is important to take precedence of that very benign yet, well, it's not benign actually, it's quite damaging. The concept of popularity. I don't want necessarily more subscribers than the New Zealand Herald in order to show how popular I am. What I want it for is to show how incompetent they are. With all their resources, they cannot beat me in that avenue, because the things that they do, the things that they broadcast, do not compel human action. They compel human submission and non-participation. Oh, it's a weather report. Oh, it's a helicopter crash. Oh, it's a something. None of that shit matters. It really hasn't mattered. That's why people subscribe to me rather than them, because I talk about shit that matters to them. What I want to do is, just like the US military does with everything that's innocuous and inherently good, I want to weaponize it. I want to use you, the audience, as a weapon to strike at the mainstream media establishment and the fake alternative media establishment. To let these people know that you have a conscience. To let them see that through not covering issues of importance, even though they have a higher production value and all the flashy gizmos and everything, even though that may be, it is the people with a conscience that will actually participate, who will actually support you when you need support, who can actually save you when you need to be saved. If you pour a whole lot of money into an advertising campaign, you don't buy people's loyalty. You only buy their attention. That is why I am so loyal to the activists in this country. That is why I am loyal to the cause of freedom and hope and humanity. In the hopes that that loyalty will be returned, that it will be retained. At points when I have been attacked, taken down, or wish to expand into a new avenue and require a significant increase in that support. Usually when those times have happened, and they have happened several times, often once a year there'll be some kind of big donation drive for a particular piece of equipment or something that I need in order to take this operation to the next level. And every single time, without fail, the goals have been met. Not because I worked harder. Not because I was operating some kind of bleeding heart. But because I have a track record of doing exactly what I say I'm going to do. And I have earned trust because of that. The mainstream media do not have your trust. do they? Members of the alternative media now have your trust. And it seems that if you're watching television and listening to alternative media, it's kind of like a strange balancing act. Because at the same time you think, man, that Carl's Jr. commercial, bro, yeah? We need to go get that Jim Beam bourbon burger from Carl's Jr., bro. Like, right now. I'm so freaking hungry. And that ad was extremely tantalizing. And we're going to go spend a couple of bucks there buying some weaponized food products. Okay, bro? Please don't argue with... No. No, don't tell me it's against morality. No. Look, bro. I am suffering brainwashing here. Okay? They have mind-controlled me through the television to want that burger. Do not resist. Do not resist. You see? That's the kind of like strange balancing act that we've got, isn't it? We're willing to go and listen to the advertisements of mainstream media because they offer us something tantalizing, something pleasurable for a short period of time. Yet there's a large element of this alternative movement who, as soon as somebody like me asks for support of any kind, asks for action or participation on their part at all, they instantly switch off and are no longer interested. Why is that? I don't know. Let me think about that for a moment and I'll get back to you. Is it because advertising is a much more pleasurable way of absorbing your information by having the constant stream of information interrupted, sometimes regularly, sometimes for quite a few minutes in a stretch? That's why I love American Freedom Radio. That's why I'm here when I've been offered gigs on so many other networks who literally have people asking me every other week to return. You know, it's because of the crew we have here. Because we're on the same wavelength. Because we understand what's on the line here. We understand that this is not a weekend excursion. This is not some road trip that has a certain destination. This is a gamble on life itself. And we're betting that the human race has the power, has the responsibility, has the honor and the compulsion to fight back against those who oppress us, those who are predatory. These people, are they people? If they do not value human life, if they wish to enslave and dominate it, can you dehumanize them? Can you just say, oh, they're lizard people or they're archons or something like that, and then justify any kind of atrocity? But let's think about it. The human race believes that it is the superior form of life on this planet. I believe this is because of one specific reason. We're at the top of the food chain. We believe we are at the top of the food chain. We believe that we don't have any natural predators. But we do. Psychopaths. Psychopath looks at a person, and they see it very differently from the way I do. I look at a random person and I see a mystery. Not a mystery that can be solved, but a mystery that you can spend a little bit of time getting to know a little bit more about and seeing what you can learn. That's what everybody is to me. Every new person that I haven't met or had a conversation with, anybody who's got a good smile or a good laugh, anybody who talks about conspiracy is always very interesting to talk to. That's how I look at a person. Psychopath, on the other hand, looks at them in terms of a predator would. If you're in a herd, and you're protected by all these other animals in the herd, you can see a psychopath, and like that, they won't try and come at you, you know, because you're sort of protected. The predator waits until it's become part of the landscape, so you don't even know that it's there. And in that one moment where you trust it just enough to go away from your support network, your friends, your family and everything, to trust this one other animal, that's when they strike. That's when they get you, when they isolate you. That's how they act. They are our natural predators. To us, the illusion is that we didn't have natural predators. To them, it is actually true. Psychopaths and archons have no natural predators. Nothing is higher on the food chain than them. They are the ultimate. But that's not to say that every animal doesn't have a defense mechanism. Even dinosaurs. Tyrannosaurus rex or a velociraptor or something like that trying to attack another dinosaur. You've got Brontosaurus, for example. What did they use as a weapon? Their tail. Hundreds and hundreds of kilos of force, bone, and flesh smacking you upside of the head. You're dead if it gets one hit in there. Just because archons don't have any natural predators doesn't mean that their prey isn't deadly. We are dangerous. Human beings are a very unpredictable breed. Nobody could have predicted anything that is happening today, 100 years ago, or 10 years ago, without knowing the plans for it. And I'm talking about, to be exact, to be precise, to encapsulate all that is, and predict all that is going to be tomorrow. Who's going to invent what machine? Who's going to make what speech? Who's going to be at what airport that blows up? There's this organized chaos. We think we're in control of our lives, but we're not. It's life's great deception that we're in control of our own lives, and the reason why that deception has been sold to us so emphatically is because if we think we're in control of our own lives, we think we're at the top of the food chain, and then we have no natural predators to fight back or defend ourselves against. That way it makes it so much easier for the predator to blend in, makes it so much easier to attack and kill without the herd noticing that it's under threat, being corralled, like having a whole bunch of cows in a particular paddock that are ripe for the slaughter, and they get led unwittingly into a slaughterhouse where they are carved up, where every single piece of their body is ground into a horrific concoction that is then sold on to the prey, full of goodness knows what, being irradiated, a systemic poisoning of the entire food supply, water supply, and air supply is already in existence. Did you think that's by accident? Predators with an irrepressible desire to control, to dominate, to kill, to rape, to pillage, to provoke hatred, mistrust, to deceive, to betray. Everything that they desire is the antithesis to everything that we desire. Every talent and every skill that they have is the direct opposite to us. This is why psychopaths have always been in control. It's because they've managed to prevent us from becoming aware that there are people who do not think like us, who do not possess our morality, who will do things that we could never do. And that's their strength. They're capable of creating an alternate reality that people buy into. Is it something you should be afraid of? In my opinion, anybody who says that there is nothing to be afraid of or you should never feel fear is just out of touch with reality. There's a reason why fear is hardwired in, is because it's to protect you. To say people should never be afraid is to say that people should never try and protect themselves. Speaking of protecting themselves, we have a very special guest joining us now, and I want to get the network to pick him up. He's just jumped online, by the way, Danny. It's Ian Jacklin, and he is a former champion kickboxer, been in a couple of B-movies and things of that nature back in the day. And what he's been doing now is trying to kick cancer's ass. And I think that it's a really good thing that he's doing. And he's I don't know. I'll have to really ask him about it. But I wonder, is his motivation the same as mine, trying to go out against things because you've experienced maybe something bad and you got empathy for other people? Now, he might be on the phone there, or he seems to be adding onto Skype. So yes, if he wants to come on now, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to produce on air and do a couple of things. It interrupted a rather deep little rant, didn't it? So we'll try and get him up here. Danny, are you there? Can you please add him to the call? I've sent you his Skype. Now, focus, Vinny. So I think I've got him on another call. He's trying to ring me right now. He's coming in. Ian!
Yo.
My man, welcome to the show.
How's it going?
Have you noticed that, hey, do you want the short version or the long version? Have you ever noticed that whenever somebody says, how's it going, your standard response is just, good.
Yeah, at this stage, I'm just happy to be on, so I'll take the long one.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. No. It's my show. It's my show. So you tell me. You give me the long version of how's it going.
Okay. Well, it's going really good. You caught me. I'm up in Nevada City, which is sort of near Utah, Northern California mountains, having a great old time interviewing some of the Sacramento people for the because we're trying to recall the Senator Pan and the Governor Jerry Brown for forcing vaccinations on our children. So,
well, are you going to rename him Soylent Brown then?
There you go. I like that. So, anyway, yeah, that's what I'm doing. Oh, now should I put my camera on or what? How's this? Is this a radio?
We're just doing it to radio for now. So don't feel too self-conscious.
Oh, okay, cool. So I don't have to worry. Okay, perfect. You don't see me. Right on. Well, so, man, you know what? You're right. It's a good thing you told me to not interview you, because ever since you interviewed me years ago, you know, I've followed you a little bit, and I can't believe you're into all the same stuff I'm into with the extraterrestrials and just energy, life, universe. So really cool stuff, and I may even want to interview you someday. So,
well, Ian, I'll let you let me today, let me just. But. Let me just correct you. I'm not into UFOs and ETs and not into, like, all of the different topics that get talked about on this show. I'm not into them. I'm open to them.
Right, exactly. Yeah, well, I was really impressed with what I was hearing in this intelligent conversation. So, yeah, good stuff, man.
Hey, and it's a good break, actually. In fact, oh, my God. Ian, last night we had the best conversations like ever. We had a whole bunch of truthers in a bar. We had like 24 people, and you could just like walk around from one table to the other, to the smoker's corner, to the people at the bar, to the people at the tables at the front, and you could just sit down and start talking about conspiracies, bro. And everybody was laughing and getting along and having a few beers and having a good time. And just what you said there about having intelligent conversations, yeah,
and it's because everybody's waking up, and I think when we run into somebody else like ourselves, and as it turns out, everybody's like ourselves. It's just, you know, the 1%.
Oh, no, that's not the case at all. Well, I specifically organized a gig at this bar to invite truthers. So, you know, it was an artificial experiment.
Oh, okay. No, well, there's definitely degrees of awakeness for sure. But what I'm saying is when you see somebody like yourself and it validates that you're not the only one on that page, it's really enlightening. And so those conversations become, you know, vivid and surreal almost sometimes.
Well, it's because you suddenly realize that you're not crazy because you're not just the only one thinking this.
Yeah, exactly. And thank God. And what else are we going to do? I mean, we're ready to snap. I mean, I snapped recently on my poor Facebook friends. I went after all my religious friends. I was like, to hell with you Muslims, to hell with you Christians, to hell with you Jews. Because you just allowed them to – I blame the religious people of California for you know, allowing Jerry Brown to sign the bill to force vaccinations. Because I had to – I basically was just grandstanding and wanting to make a stink. I was so angry. I was ready to punch the wall. And every time I do that, I break my hand. So – you know, I just figured I'd just take it out on somebody. And then I went back, of course, and I said, you know, I apologize. And I know it's not because you're religious. It's because you didn't know any better. But now you got to wake up and let's go, because they're going to force vaccinations. And not only is that wrong, because vaccinations are not good for you. They're not going to help you at all. And I don't know if you've been seeing what's in the news lately, too. So all these doctors getting killed because they were working on some of the same things about the vaccination causing more than just, you know, autism and crib death. I mean, it's right into this, the kind of the heart attacks and things that could be going on. It's like they're planting things into us.
It's like customers for life. Yeah, it's like they're putting gang warfare in your home. You know, the Bloods and the Cribs, and it's just. You're talking about religion there, right? And here's the thing. I got no problem with people who have a religion, who have a higher spirituality. If you need somebody else to write a book for you to know what to believe in or something like that because you can't come up with it yourself and no inherent natural laws by instinct, then that's actually a good idea because then you're not going to kill people anymore. You're not going to steal from people anymore and that kind of thing. And you're going to love your kids and all of these things that you should probably know by natural instinct. If you need to be told, it's a good idea to have somebody to tell you to do them, I guess. And especially if you volunteer to have them tell you to do this kind of thing. And it reminds me of this very good meme. And it had a Muslim girl looking into the Quran and a Christian girl looking into the Bible, and they're sitting next together on a hill, and it's all nice and sunny, and they're both smiling, and the meme says, "Look, both of them are full of bullshit." And it's like, you were saying before, bro, about how you were like, oh, it's not because you're religious, it's because you didn't know any better. And I was just thinking, whoa, hold on a second, what's the concept of belief? Isn't the very concept actually that you have a belief because you actually don't know? Right? So what's the difference between being religious and not knowing any better? I think they're one and the same.
I'm not going to say anything.
I just offended like 90% of my audience. Oh, fuck. Hey, look, you got to be able to laugh at yourself, even when other people are making fun of you, especially if it's the truth, because that's what's give it the divine force, that extra oomph to drive it home.
Yeah, man, and you got to find out what it is that... I always just wanted to know the truth, so I'll listen to everybody's story. And then when I started realizing that I was listening to the Jesus story for so many years and the typical Bible stories, and then I saw Zeitgeist and realized that that story had been taught many times. There's been more than one Christ-like figure for the, you know, so it just kept me going to find new levels of, and because you have to accept everything. I mean, I've learned about the Archons, I've learned about the different kind of energies and stuff. And you have to, because guess what? The shit they taught me in Sunday school wasn't the whole story. you know? So I just keep my ears open, my eyes open, and always trying to learn, because this is a, you know, we live in this world, and right now some bad people are running it, and I'm trying to figure out how to fix that. And being spiritual, I know it's going to be a part of it.
Well, here's another interesting concept about, you know, realizing that you weren't taught the whole story from the Bible. Do you really think the entire creation of mankind and everything up till now would fit into a single book?
Well, I would have liked to have heard about the Emerald Tablets. You know, I never knew about the Emerald Tablets. And that, I mean, they were written 60,000 years ago. That trumps anything, any Bible.
I never even heard of the Emerald Tablets, bro. What's that? What is the Emerald Tablets? I never even heard of it.
Oh, dude, you're going to love it.
I mean, unless they're an ecstasy pill, in which case I have done them. Yeah, go ahead.
No, check them out. They're called the Emerald Tablets. They were written by Thoth the Atlantean, supposedly. And it's, you can tell by reading them or listening to them that they're similar to, like, the Bible definitely came, some of the stories from the Bible came from it. It's all about energy and stuff. I haven't read them all and got through them all, but it's my point is that they're 60,000 years old. They're made of a material that is brass impregnable. It's nuclear impregnable. You could drop a nuclear bomb on them and you can't destroy them. They're from off planet, and they've got the basics to life. You know, to walk towards the light. That was Thoth's main message, I think, was to, you know, deny the darkness and go for the light. So I mean, I'm glad I stumbled across that, because that's older and more wise than the even if you were to find a good version of the Bible. I don't really like the King James Version, maybe some of the original Aramaic versions and stuff. But anyway, there's just so much reading to do out there for different spiritual works.
Well, it was something that Alex Ansari was mentioning in the first hour, actually, about the reason why monks go celibate and things of that nature. And it just got me thinking that the only way to actually really serve some kind of divine purpose is to give up certain pleasures of the current of the flesh or something of that nature. Like, it has to be some kind of sacrifice that is actually a real pain in the ass. And it's only through that real pain in the ass kind of deprivation that you sort of begin to get the impression of what life is really about, self-sacrifice for something greater than yourself.
Yeah, that's, but I mean, I think you and I picked the best way of doing that. I think we got the, rather than going on a hunger strike or meditating on ice, you know, I like expressing ourselves the way we do. It's the same thing.
Well, it's also perhaps a lot more fun. I I mean, you know, I mean, I yeah. I could, like, not have sex for the next 50 years, but
yeah, you know, well, you know what's sad is, man, I might as well be a monk. I'm not even going to tell you, it's been way too long. I'm getting monkish, so that's a notice out to the ladies out there. I am single, very fucking single.
Welcome to activism. Yeah, I was very lucky that I met my wife before I became an activist, and I was lucky that she loved me so much that she actually stuck through me through all this thing. And I was lucky that she was kind of awakened herself to a degree, like, so she was actually capable of understanding this. But this is actually another thing: truth of dating and truth of breeding. Right? You know, the world is filling up with people who are dicks. Okay, there are more dicks being produced per day than at any other time in human history. It's documented. I've read it in the media. There is an X amount of increase in dick-like behavior around the world, and that's not by accident. All right, it's a very penetrating phenomenon, and what needs to happen is that you really got to think about this. They're being born to people who aren't aware of what not being a dick is all about. All right. And so truth of dating is something that's going to be great. All right. And I'm going to, I have to do this. I've told the joke many times, and it should actually, somebody has to help me to get this off the ground. A truth of dating site called fluoridate.com. All right. So I met my husband on Fluoridate.com. We really have the hate for the reptilian, our context, sons of bitches in common, and it really, really spiced up our love life. You know, whatever tickles your pickle. Whatever feathers your leather. I just took this to a very dark place. That's where it should be. Hey, but, look.
Yeah, I don't even know how we got off on that tangent. Somehow I was, oh yeah, because monks go and they make themselves be celibate. Here I am. I'm not trying to be celibate.
You're like,
what's wrong with me?
You're like celibate by osmosis, bro.
I wish I could say I was all holier now, but no. I go to yoga classes and everything. I still can't meet nobody.
I don't know, bro. What is it? Every time in my life that I've gotten like a new girlfriend or something like that, it's been after like long stretches of being without one. And then every time when I just suddenly get a new girlfriend, all of a sudden all these chicks are interested in me, or, you know?
It's like
the only time the opportunity's there is when you're not allowed to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think so, but I think maybe I'm putting that vibe off that I'm with somebody or something, because, of course, at my age, too, I don't know, it's just different. You know, I'm in my 40s now, and but I look 30, so I've been told by my friends I'm at a weird spot, you know what I mean? I'm kind of awkward, but it's all right.
Well,
I think
what we were talking about, the universe and the intentions and the things that you put out there. So let's say, for example, if we just meditate for a second, we're going to like find Ian some pussy. Find Ian some pussy. Say it with me. Find Ian some pussy.
No, that's why, dude. That's because honestly, I do. I want to meet my wife. I'm not messing around no more. That's why I've been single for so long. Because I'm not, if I don't see a girl and I don't think I'm going to probably have kids with her, I'm not going to pursue a conversation with her, even unless, you know, for other things. But no, I'm looking, I've sold my wild oats, dude. I'm looking for the one.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think also there's that thing about love kind of striking you like kabam. It happened with me and my wife, bro. We met one night. We were kind of a bit drunk. We kind of got pimped out, bro. Like I was trying to date her friend, but her friend wasn't interested in me, so she invited Sarah over to her place and got us both drunk and then went to bed early. So, you know, one thing led to another, and I was at that time in my life, I was the smoothest cunt imaginable. Like there was no way she could have resisted my charms. And but she did this one thing, bro. I was like riding a bicycle, right? And she managed to disassemble my bicycle in the dark, fold back the seats of her little Holden Barina, put the bicycle in there, and then drive me home, reassemble it on the side of the road. And I was like, yep, she's a keeper. And then later on that night, we're lying in bed afterwards, and you know, when girls in those movies or anything like that, they always like lie over to the guy and go, so what are you thinking about after that, you know, expecting him to say I love you. I was just like, I knew that was going to happen, so I did it first because I was feeling it, you know. And I rolled over to my wife and I said, so what are you thinking about? and she goes, you know, I'm thinking I love you. And I go, you know, that's so weird because I was thinking the same thing.
Damn, that's the real deal.
Yeah, yeah. And then when after we got married, I think it was like maybe 2 months after we got married, my wife walks into the office and she's got this little smile on her face, you know, that kind of thing. And I go, what you thinking about, baby? Because just before she walked into the office, I was like, man, my wife, that's so awesome. Like, I actually love her more now that we're married.
Whoa.
And she walks into the office like not 5 minutes later, and she just grin on her face. And I go, what you thinking about, baby? She goes, well, I was just thinking, like, since we got married, I love you even more. And I go, that's so funny, baby, because I was just thinking the same thing.
You see, that shit's real, man. I knew it was real, and that's why I never gave up. I tell you, there was years where I was suicidal, ready to blow my brains out. I got drunk for like fucking a decade, and I was like, this is, I'm not giving up, though. I'm not giving up, because I know it's possible. And you just told me right then and there, I was right about that. And if there's anybody out there right now hurting, don't ever just know, in time this too shall pass. It's hard to believe. It's been so long for me now that I, you know, like I'm complaining about being single for so long. But I'm also, you know, happy I haven't had that broken heart for a while either. So anyway, thanks for sharing that with me, man. That's awesome, dude. That's really good stuff.
Yeah. See, that's the difference between belief and knowing.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy. Right on. So you got me in a better mood now, man.
I get that a lot. Now, vaccines, bro. I'm going to talk about this for a bit, and we're talking about crib death. And that was actually one of the quiz night questions, right? I held this pub quiz for conspiracy theorists. It was great, you know. And awesome. That was one of the questions. What was the known vaccine reaction that often gets blamed on parents? And it's shaken baby syndrome.
Yeah. Horrible. I just watched the most amazing documentary tonight, or not even a documentary, it's just a YouTube video. And it proved every point that I've ever seen about the vaccinations, and that's one of them. And that was sort of at the end of the list, you know, the children that die immediately from the shot in the office. That's horrible. All the way down to you know, there are still parents in jail right now because they were arrested and thrown away for shaken baby syndrome, for murdering their child, when nine times out of 10, it was most likely the vaccinations, because it's the same kind of symptoms. It's the same death, basically, what happened. So that's just one of the many horrifying things that, again, this is the Archons just having a heyday, like they are with the prison system, you know?
Speaking of which, I came up with a joke about that. Serco are now pulling up the private prisons in New Zealand, and one of the women's prisons is having a beauty pageant. And
get the fuck out of here.
It's called the Misdemeanor Pageant. There's another joke on that vein. What do you call a beauty pageant for pregnant women?
A beauty pageant for pregnant women, what?
Misconception.
Oh. I'm not saying nothing.
Yeah, well, I think having jokes at these kind of like very serious times is probably a good idea. Ultimately, here's the thing. You get too serious, right? It's like, bro, it's just the end of the world. It's just the enslavement of humanity. There's only 50, 50 chemicals in the water. You're only getting bathed by like over 100 wireless radiation signals right now that are penetrating every cell in your body. You know, there's only 90% of the world's economy that's controlled by ruthless criminal sociopaths. Come on. Things aren't that bad, man.
Right.
and I think this is the other thing is to see hope where there is none, to see light where only darkness exists. That's two things that can come from hope, belief, and if people need to use religion to get that hope, to get that belief, so that they can stay out of the dark cloud that clouds around us when we don't have hope injected into our life. That kind of thing can sometimes come from within, and it's kind of like an alchemy transmutation. You can, and that's one of the great things about making people laugh and just telling jokes about the terrible shit that happens to us. It's the only way to actually bring light to the darkness. Ultimately, you don't really have much of a choice in the matter. You have to make jokes about it, otherwise the truth and reality just drives you insane, drives you to depression, or drives you to suicide, or drives you to hurt people that you love, and drive you to be so selfish about your own pursuits that you prioritize yourself ahead of the entire picture. and the part that you play in it, you know?
Right. No, exactly. Yeah, you got to laugh because it's a very serious topic. Is, you know, my fight was always dog was in the dog fight of the cancer world. You know, if you got cancer, you come to me, and I tell you from 17 years of experience, you get alkaline, you know, get your pH to 7.4. It was probably a 5 if you had cancer. You know, just I learned how horrible the pharmaceutical company is. Thanks to doing that documentary called iCureCancer.com, I found out that the Rockefellers and the Carnegies ran the pharmaceutical companies and soon the medical schools because they were smart and they realized investing in that was a good move. And that's how I realized that cancer was curable until they took over, because now they just force drugs on you and they know chemo doesn't work for most cancers. You know, 3% of the time it might work for some, but tumor cancers, that's it. You know, so it's like, come on, why are we even using that? So since the good news is, since I learned that making my own documentary, I thought, great, I can now keep myself and my family happy and healthy and fuck, you know, the hell with the rest of the world if they don't want to listen to me. But then I found out that if my kid's not 18 and they get cancer, they're forced chemo, radiation, and surgery anyway. And that was, I finished my movie and I already had it out before I found that out. So that's why I'm making part two called Baby Killers. And then now that I've found out that the vaccinations is being forced on California, I'm jumping in and making part two, cancer, I Cure Cancer 2, also going to include the vaccinations, because it's straight up murder and they've really gotten out of order now. It was bad enough bringing down two of our towers at 911, you know, in front of us blatantly. Now they're just going to blatantly kill our children in front of us. No way, not on my watch. It's not freaking happening. I'll go to every martial arts school I know and have them go to their local public schools when they start vaccinating these kids, and I'll have all the black belts stand there in front of the fucking principals and let them know that if you even think of putting that in that kid, you're gonna learn some martial arts real quick, some Gracie jiu-jitsu.
Hey, do you know Yeah, well, you have to do something, anything, all right? And it doesn't matter what you do, as long as you're not contributing to the problem, right? As long as you're not making things worse. And it's actually quite a talent, isn't it, to figure out whether or not you're doing more harm than good.
Well, the key is just to make sure, for me anyway, to never get arrested myself. So as much as I'd love to go and just start dropping people, you know, you can't. You got to do it all with my camera. I shoot my camera and that's all I ever shoot, you know.
Although I do have a fantasy, and I think a lot of people do, about being attacked by a police officer for a completely unjustified reason, and just haymakering the motherfucker, you know, just really just take him down, just knock down for the count kind of thing. Everybody has that fantasy, because I think it's not because people inherently hate cops. It's because people inherently hate people aggressing and being violent with them, and they all wish that they could fight back to the level of effect where they could take somebody out of the picture without killing or permanently damaging them, that kind of thing. Just simply overpower them.
The all-American Clint Eastwood punch at the end of the movie, you know, which way, Clyde, right or left? Boom, hit him with a straight right, baby. I want to do that to Jimmy Kimmel. That scumbag, I don't know if you know, follow him, but I saw he was on with a stupid little TV show at night, and he basically disrespected all the mothers and fathers that have lost children to vaccines. He made a joke, tried to make a really bad joke about, you know, we're tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists that think forced vaccinations is wrong. And I really want to punch him in the face, but I don't think I'll be able to. Unless I could sucker him into somehow, you know, sucker punch me, but I highly doubt it. But I am going to meet that motherfucker, because he is in, he's in California where I live, and he's in Hollywood, my town. He works where I used to live, like Highland and Hollywood. So I plan on going there. I don't know whether with thousands of people or just maybe myself and a few cops, we'll see. I don't know, just to be safe. I'm not going to do anything, but I definitely need a conversation with him, because he disrespected all the parents in California when he made a joke about us, and I'm not going to take that. He did better. Hope I don't see him on the street by myself.
Yeah, assholes are lucky I'm not armed. You know, and of course we're joking, you know, we're not working for the FBI. We don't threaten people on live radio, bro. That's just not the way we do it.
No, but I'm going to, you'll see it. I'm going to either be on the show or I'm going to have some kind of rally there, because he crossed the line. He convinced thousands of people that night in California that vaccinations, like people that thought vaccinations were wrong, are idiots. He was good. He did a good job at it. If I didn't know what I was doing, he would have had me convinced. So to me, that's just wrong. He needs to do a public apology on air to all the mothers that have lost children to Gardasil in itself. 1 in 912 girls are going to die for taking Gardasil next year if that law is forced. Because they do. Every 912 girls, one dies of Gardasil.
Yeah, so. they have it on the vaccine program. This is how much of you are guaranteed to die. You know, but it's only a few of you. are you fucking kidding me, Brian? What is it doing over here? How do you sleep at night? Well, I don't have a conscience. Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's because nobody's keeping them accountable, but I am. Like I say, I live in Hollywood, like when I'm there. So when I know where Jimmy is, and I'm going to let him know that it was wrong what he did, and he needs to apologize. And we need to start stepping up to everybody and let these people know. They're not untouchable. Those motherfuckers. Oh, I'm so upset with that guy.
Well, it's also okay to be upset. It's okay to display emotions. And the reason why I think the news has gotten everybody into this lulled sense of, like, not actually being active at all in opposing scumbaggery, more or less, just to put it bluntly, is because there's no emotional call to action. There's no emotional response. And that's the thing. Emotions are very powerful. And if you're simply passively making people afraid or whatever, you know, you're not yelling, you're not screaming. That's how psychopaths kidnap children. No, don't scream, don't scream. Everything's going to be nice. Everything's going to be fine. I've got lollipops. Scary as shit, man. And I find it's the people that appear to be so threatening to me now. Are the people who appear so trustworthy to the mainstream public?
Yeah, it's I just, until the people wake up, we're kind of screwed, blue, and tattooed, and we just got to try and you know, like you say, be funny and find ways of lightening it up. I love yoga. I love, you know, martial arts, and you know, keeping my mind busy really helps. So. And never giving up, you know. The thing is, we got to be more patient than Big Pharma, and Big Pharma is really patient. They'll wait. They've got new lawyers coming in. When our lawyers get old, they got new young guys coming in. So we can never give up.
You can't give up. It's an eternal struggle, and ultimately, it'd just be nice to survive it. You know, it's kind of like my ultimate goal. The only reason why I've sacrificed everything that I once valued in my life is ultimately because I don't want to be a slave, and I don't want to get exterminated, and I don't really see any other way of justifying my existence unless I devote that very existence to preventing that happening to myself and other people.
Yeah, thank you. Exactly. Yeah, and we're all coming along, man. The numbers are increasing every day. And it's just trying to decide how to go about it. Do we go straight up light worker, where we're all just meditating and putting light into certain people, places, things? Or do we really have to someday, you know, push back with the arms kind of thing? I don't know. You know, right now I say no. I think we can do it all peacefully. But if we're still here 30 years from now, bro, and somebody hands me a fucking machine gun, I might take it.
Well, you know? We've all got that kind of violence streak. Well, yeah, sure. I mean, fuck, the world could change 30 years in the next one. You know, how technology is going so fast in its development. Like, I think 5 years ago, you could have like 128 megabytes on an SD card, and now you've got 128 gigabytes on it. Like, literally a thousand times the data on this exact same size card with the exact same reader. And this is just the stuff that's in public. Goodness knows what kind of black ops shit is going on, bro. Oh my god. Here's an interesting word. Technotronic. A lot of people think it's some kind of dance music. but it's actually some kind of mind control weapon that and a branch of whole bunches of different fields of mind control weaponry. They can shoot a beam into your head, bro, and broadcast audio signals into it. So they can literally speak into your brain and make you think you're going fucking nuts, like you're hearing voices and shit. And all these people are being experimented on currently on the United States. They're known as TIs, or targeted individuals, and they're all just ordinary people, you know, like, why would they be going after you? And nobody believes them. And they've got, like, only small teams, relatively cheap operations to gang stalk and mess with somebody's head, and they're simply doing weapons testing to test the effectiveness of these techniques and technologies, so that when they later use them and deploy these technologies on the battlefield, they've ironed out the goddamn kinks.
Right. Doesn't surprise me. Like, when they put all those germs in the subways and spread HIV, they spray us every day with chemtrails. That, to me, is hysterical. I mean, I look up in the sky, I see that. I know what's in the food, the GMOs. I mean, we can take the hint, guys. You're trying to off us. Okay, we get it now.
Dude.
There's like 99% of us and one of you. Why don't we do something about this?
It always takes one. They call it the hero complex. When everybody else is standing in a crowd and they see somebody being subjugated, oppressed, hurt, everybody has the instinct to jump in and do something to save this person from these vicious blows of the police to their skull of a pregnant woman.
Right.
But until one person actually does step in, nobody has the courage to step forward. Once he does, however, the crowd suddenly turns. They get emboldened by examples. And that's why it's so important, as if you are that hero, you have a responsibility to practice what you preach. Otherwise, the inspiration and the action that you will otherwise not inspire in others is a great loss to the human race in general.
Definitely. Yeah, you got to practice what you preach. That's why I plan. You're going to see something about me and Jimmy. You'll see.
Oh, well, I hope it's not you became a targeted individual and got executed through a Slipknot that you couldn't tie in a police cell somewhere because you got pulled over for a fucking parking ticket. All right. Oh, we're so fucked, bro. We're so fucked. This has actually become my favorite phrase. We're so fucked, bro. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. And Google Ian Jacklin if you can, and donate to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Love you all. Love you very much. And we'll see you again sometime, folks.